The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Well, with the time difference, the American Super Bowl is played right in the middle of the night here in the UK, but I happened to wake up early enough this morning to see the last 5 minutes of the Super Bowl, and from what I've read since, I guess it wasn't that good of a game. Lots of defense and turnovers and penalties. But for me, I think the last 5 minutes was pretty exciting. So for those of you who are disappointed in the game, you should do what I did. Just move to the UK and on the Sunday of the Super Bowl, get in a good workout, spend some time with the family, go to bed early, and then wake up nice and early on Monday morning before work and watch those last 5 minutes. And as it turns out, I guess those were the best minutes of the game. It was interesting after I saw a little bit of the commentary that the BBC had here in the UK about the Super Bowl. And it was hilarious in that they somehow were able to work in a shot at the Republican debate, I guess, that took place the night before the game here, where the BBC sports commentators lashing out at those Republicans, I guess, whatever are left, six or seven candidates. In any event, the Super Bowl, as you know, or at least if you're in America, you know how huge that event is each year. Once someone sent me some stats about just the economic impact of that game. There's more than 100 million people just in the United States that tune in to watch that sporting event. And every year there's, depending on the size of the stadium, 70, 80, 90,000 people who attend the game. With this particular game, the average ticket price for the Super Bowl on those websites that scalp the tickets or sell the tickets at a higher cost, $4,800. That was the average cost for a Super Bowl ticket. And Super Bowl-related consumer spending all across the U.S. amounted to $12.3 billion. $12.3 billion. And, of course, you're probably familiar with all the buzz that typically runs up to a Super Bowl regarding the 30-second commercials. This year, they cost $5 million for companies to put a 30-second ad on the Super Bowl or during the programming. Gambling, lots of gambling surrounding the Super Bowl. About $4.2 billion in bets were made on this game, most of them illegal. In the NFL as a whole, you talk about a popular sport, the average attendance this past season was 68,000 people at each NFL game, all of those teams, and so many of them not even that good. 68,000 people. The NFL generates about $10 billion per year. That's quite a successful company, looking at it just at the bottom line. $10 billion. Its top executives, back in 2012, were paid $44 million. It's a booming business in the United States, worldwide, in fact. And if you happen to hear what President Obama said about the U.S. economy at large on Friday, well, you'd think the U.S., its economy is just like that NFL business. It's just booming. There's just money to burn. All the executives are paid so well. The rest of the world looks at the United States and sees this giant of a company. As I said, this is coming from what he said on Friday. Here's what the president told a pool of reporters.
So, as I said in my State of the Union address, the United States of America right now has the strongest, most durable economy in the world. I know that's still inconvenient for Republican stump speeches as their doom and despair tour plays in New Hampshire. I guess you cannot please everybody. The budget that I send to Congress on Tuesday is going to make sure that we can continue that progress. Talking down the American economy, by the way, does not make that progress.
Don't talk it down. Talk it up. Talk it up. I mean, it's a big party. It's a Super Bowl party. And we're going to keep spending, and Americans are going to keep having fun, and the world is going to envy the United States. The president's preparing for his final budget he submits to Congress on Tuesday. And, of course, we haven't seen it yet, but packed within that budget, I'm sure there's going to be just more and more spending proposals. Nothing done or said or written in that budget to confront the government's massive problem with overspending. The $19 trillion debt, for example. We've played clips before of what the then-president, or rather Senator Obama, said in 2008, where he talked about George W. Bush being irresponsible and unpatriotic because he took the United States from $5 trillion to $10 trillion in debt. And here President Obama has promptly gotten into office and taken the United States from $10 trillion to $20 trillion. The United States has about 4.4% of the world's population, and yet we own almost one-third of all global debt. That's what we own. And that debt is ever expanding. It has to expand to keep the party going. But there's coming a time, there's coming a point, of course, when this massive bubble is going to burst. How much longer will that be? We don't know for sure, but we've been telling you. For years now, we've been preparing you for what's coming. How much longer can America's leaders afford to ignore this elephant in the room? How much longer before the mighty U.S. dollar is no longer the world's reserve currency? I'll read some stories to you in just a minute that show very clearly what the direction is for the rest of the world as it moves away from the United States, as it moves away from the dollar. As it is, I mean, people look at the dollar now and the good exchange rates with the pound or the euro and think, well, we're recovering. Things are humming along. But just look at this debt burden. Right now, the U.S. spends about $220 billion per year in interest. $220 billion. And over the next 10 years or so, those payments are expected to go from $220 billion to $750 billion. That's just in the next decade. It could get a lot worse than that if interest rates go up, which they're finally starting to do. Can the United States really afford to spend $750 billion? Where is it going to find this money? And to borrow just so that it can pay the interest on what it's borrowed. Almost a trillion in interest each year. It's incomprehensible. Our country is broke. That's what that professor, I think, from the Northeast, I have read the quote before, Lawrence Kotlikoff, his testimony last February, a year ago. There before Congress, he said it's broke. It's not broke next year or in 10 years or in 50 years or in 70 years. It's broke now. It's broke today. We're in worse shape than Greece ever was. When you just look at the size and scope of the problem, we're in worse shape than Detroit, the city, was. And yet, if you listen to America's leaders, you'd think it's the best it's ever been. Notice what else President Obama had to say Friday.
I wanted to stop by because, as you're aware by now, America's business has created another 158,000 jobs last month. After reaching 10% in 2009, the unemployment rate has now fallen to 4.9%, even as more Americans joined the job market last month. So this is the first time that the unemployment rate has dipped below 5% in almost 8 years. Americans are working.
It's exactly the opposite of the truth. Americans are not working, and the unemployment rate is dropping because more and more Americans are dropping out of the workforce and going on to food stamps and going on to other social programs. That's the truth. And Washington, D.C. can manipulate the statistics any way that they want. But the reality is, more and more Americans are out of work. And the jobs being created are not as good, or they're part-time. And you've heard us talk about these things before. This is a piece just from last week, Bloomberg. It says, during the 2007-2009 recession, state and federal governments actively encouraged people, like Crowfoot, I'm picking it up in the middle of the article, to take advantage of government aid. It says millions did, and many are still claiming benefits. I mean, during the crisis of 07 to 09, people were encouraged. Look, there's help, there's assistance, there's government assistance, and many today are still on those benefits or receiving those benefits. And it talks here specifically about the food stamps program. When unemployment was rising, people said enrollment would fall sharply when things got better. That quotes a professor from Tufts University in Boston. He says, but that hasn't happened. Another economic downturn could send costs to new heights. It says about 45 million Americans, roughly one-seventh of the population, received nutrition aid last October. That's the food stamps program. Unemployment was 5% that month. The last time joblessness fell to that level in April 2008, 28 million Americans used food stamps. So just compared to 8 years ago, there were 28 million Americans on food stamps. Today there's 45 million Americans on food stamps. And yet somehow we're supposed to believe that more and more Americans are working. Well, then why are more and more of them claiming food stamps and getting on other government programs? It says, even though eligibility rules remained unchanged during the recession, annual spending for the program administered by states with federal dollars more than doubled in 5 years to a record $76 billion in 2013. 5 years, it's doubled. It says the uneven recovery has swelled the ranks of long-term unemployed and reduce the number of people working or looking for work, for further boosting demand. It says, even for those with jobs, pay may be lower than in the past. So I guess Bloomberg is like those evil, pessimistic Republicans who want to talk about economic doom and despair, when really we should just be talking about the party. Really, we should just be talking about spending and the fact that everyone's working. There's not a problem here. There is a problem. And it's not going away. And it just keeps getting bigger. It just keeps getting bigger. This is one last statement the president made on Friday.
As far as I can tell, those who are running down the economy and adding to the anxiety don't seem to have any plausible, coherent recipe other than cut taxes for the very folks who've been doing the best in this economy. And somehow, magically, that's going to make other folks feel good. Or alternatively, they argue that the reason you're feeling insecure is because immigrants or poor people are taking more and more of your paycheck, and that is just not true. Yeah, the facts don't bear that out. That's not where the weaknesses in the economy are. That's not what's depressing wages for middle-class families or making them more vulnerable to disruptions in this economy. And I want to keep on making that argument during the course of this year.
And so that's the argument that we'll keep hearing, that everything's fine, and that those who would say that it's not, they're out there telling lies. They're not being honest. You notice how it's just all politics. We're going to present this budget. It's going to keep getting the message out. It's going to keep fixing things. And those on the other side that would complain or talk about economic doom, well, it's just a political. It's a stump speech. Don't listen to them. Robert Morley had an article last year, March, so this is almost a year old, talking about how about half of America receives some form of government benefit. He said, with so many Americans taking benefits, two-thirds of every dollar the government spends goes to these mandatory social programs. Two-thirds. And it's just ever-expanding. And then, as I say, the payments just on interest are going to multiply by two or three times in the next 10 years or so. This is what the United States has turned into, this huge, this massive nanny state with a majority of the people on the dole, living on the dole, living off the government in some form or fashion, or at least partly. And then the elected officials are there promising that the party will only continue. I haven't heard all the debates, but I don't even know if there's been a sharp common sense argument from the other side about how to address the massive debt problem, about how to address the fact that the U.S. every single year overspends by something like $500 million, or rather billion. You get them confused. Million, billion, trillion? What's the difference? It's so much, it's incomprehensible. Trillions and trillions? We have the strongest, most durable economy in the world. Do you believe that? Because the world sure doesn't. The nations of Europe don't see it that way. China doesn't see it that way. Iran doesn't see it that way. I'll cover more on that here in just a second. Many of you familiar with Herbert Armstrong, you know what's coming. You know that he talked about a massive financial crisis, one that's centered right in the United States of America. How that it's going to trigger events that impact every nation on earth. It's really going to have an impact in Europe. It already has. If you look at even what happened in 2008, 2009. What's happening in the United States is proving to be the spark that the nations in Europe need. Now, Europe's having to address other crises as well. But if you look at even how they responded to the most recent economic crisis, again, coming out of the United States, you can see where this is leading. You can see it's giving rise to the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Mr. Armstrong said in 1984, he talked about a massive banking crisis and how that it could suddenly result in triggering European nations to unite as a new world power larger than either the Soviet Union or the U.S. He said that in turn could bring on the Great Tribulation suddenly. And then, of course, that leads right into the second coming of Christ. Now, he was maybe just a few years off on the timing, talking in the 1980s about how God had held things back. But they're not being held back anymore. It's moving along. It's accelerating, these prophetic events. Let me play for you what Mr. Armstrong said back in 1984 as well. This is from a sermon he gave on July 7th, 1984.
In London, the economic conference was on while we were there. That is the summit conference of the major powers. And I can tell you now that I learned things while in London that have alarmed me very greatly. And I can see now the events that is going to trigger the formation of reunification in Europe, the resurrection of the medieval Holy Roman Empire that we've been looking forward to, that is prophesied to come. Something has been holding it back. And a year ago, when Dr. Otto von Hotzenberg was here, he'd come over here to see me on July the 10th last year, just about a year ago, he couldn't understand why they aren't able to get this unification through sooner. Something is causing it to lag and to hold it up. I said to him, I've been wondering about the same thing. But I believe that some event is going to happen suddenly, just like out of a blue sky, that is going to shock the whole world and is going to cause the nations of Europe to realize they must unite. Well, he said he believed that would have to happen too. Well, now I think I can see what may be the very event that is going to trigger it, and that is the economic situation in the world. In the future, I'll have a great deal to say about that.
In our booklet, he was right. We have quite a lot of those quotes that Mr. Armstrong had to say about that subject, about the economic situation in the world, and how that this is only going to expedite the flow of these prophetic events. If you look at just, as I said earlier, what happened in 2008, all that happened there with the financial Armageddon, as some were calling it, we wrote in our He Was Right booklet, what remains is a gaping crater in the nation's now discredited economic core. America's economy will never fully recover. And you hear so many talking about, oh, we've recovered. The president himself is leading the way. We've recovered. Everything's great. We've bounced back. I got the new jobs report. I want to rush to the podium and tell you how great everything is. But look at what it's propped up on. More and more debt. In 2011, that was the first time that U.S. debt exceeded its gross domestic product. And now we're up to $19 trillion. Not counting all the unfunded liabilities. That amounts to hundreds of trillions, really. And he was right. We wrote, looking back, it's clear that the events of September 2008 dealt a death blow to America's reputation as a stable economic superpower. It dealt a death blow. The United States is no longer a stable economic superpower. Der Spiegel wrote regarding that crisis, it really does look as if the foundations of U.S. capitalism have shattered. And Europe has been responding since that time, since that crisis. In fact, they blame the United States for that crisis that impacted so many other nations. Events have been accelerating. A little over a year after that crisis of September 2008, those European Union members ratified the Lisbon Treaty. The EU Constitution took effect December 2009. It's all happening just like Mr. Armstrong said that it would. And through it all, as I say, whether it's the German finance minister or Angela Merkel or, at the time, French President Nicolas Sarkozy, they were all blaming the United States for this global financial crisis. So it's America's fault. And so Europe, led by Germany, of course, has taken charge. And you've, of course, listened to us and read lots of our materials on how Germany solves or has been solving the euro crises. They've demanded more control. The European Central Bank, it needs to be given full control. And the only member state to really kick and scream over it is Britain. And that's only isolated Britain, all the more. And we touch on this too. And he was right. It says the Eurozone debt crisis is the catalyst dividing Europe into what is referred to as a two-speed Europe. This is from our booklet. He was right. The fiscal pact formalizes it, consolidating a minority of EU nations, the Eurozone, into a fiscal union. Ultimately, the strongest Roman Catholic economies within the EU will break away from the rest, demanding that they yield to the power of the Rome-Berlin axis or be cut off from vital resources. This is the next step. This is the next step toward refining the rising rising United States of Europe into a 10-nation imperial bloc, as Herbert Armstrong prophesied in 1952, over 60 years ago. It's all been prophesied. Now you look at what's happened more recently. I mentioned Iran. Here they've received all of this cash as a result of the nuclear deal. That deal that was finalized on January 16th. And this from Reuters, it says Iran wants to recover tens of billions of dollars it's owed by India and other buyers of its oil in euros, and is billing new crude sales in euros too, looking to reduce its dependence on the U.S. dollar following last month's sanction relief. The nations of this world are looking to reduce their dependence on the U.S. dollar. It's happening in Iran, it's happening in China, it's happening in Europe. The dollar's days as the world's reserve currency are numbered. If you think it can't happen, well, just look at Britain. Go back a little further in history, and not even that far back, and see what happened to the mighty pound, the British pound, that the whole world relied on. This article by Robert Morley on, I think it was posted January 29th, so a week and a half ago. China unveils a dangerous new economic weapon during a perfectly timed distraction. And he talks about how that this was unveiled on January the 16th. We've talked a lot about the nuclear deal being finalized on January 16th. And here on the same day, the anniversary of Herbert Armstrong's death, the 30-year anniversary, China inaugurated this new international investment bank. The Chinese president said this was a historic moment. Of course, we were talking about it last year. I think Robert Morley had an article in the July Trumpet, the death blow to the dollar, because that's when we learned of the plans to develop this international investment bank. It's called the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. And this was set up by the Chinese to challenge U.S. global economic leadership. That's what it's about. Robert Morley was all over this last year. And if you recall, if you read his article, America was trying to convince other nations not to join in with China on this. But it failed. America's efforts failed, even with its closest allies. Everybody just went along. This is from that piece from January 29th, Robert Morley says, during the weeks preceding January 16th, turmoil and fear gripped world markets. Trillions in wealth vanished in China, Europe, and America. For America, it began as the worst opening in U.S. market history. It quickly became the worst 4-day start, then 10-day start, then 2-week start. Here we are in 2016, and Wall Street's off to one of its worst starts in history. Is the party just going to keep going? Well, God's going to keep it propped up just long enough for the sake of his work. But be assured, that economic collapse, that economic crisis is coming. And as Mr. Armstrong said there, it's going to happen suddenly. Well, they've already been happening. One shock after another. 2008, when's the next big earthquake, financially speaking? Robert talks about oil prices plummeting and how that this is having quite an impact on the not just the oil markets, but nations that are so dependent, including the United States now with its oil boom there in North Dakota. Where is this quote I wanted to give you? He says, meanwhile, oil prices are plummeting, deluged by the perfect storm of technological breakthrough, sluggish demand, and economic war among Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Iran. According to the Bank of for International Settlements, there's an astounding $2.5 trillion of energy debt outstanding globally. The fear in America is that the oil fracking boom is on the verge of an epic bust. Well, the cost for oil is so low. He says here, Robert Morley, he says it's easy to see why the inauguration of the AIIB, that's the Chinese bank, how it went largely unnoticed. And yet it happened right on the 16th of January, 2016. And as Robert brings out, I mean, it shouldn't have been ignored. It should have gotten a lot of attention. He said, as Larry Summers wrote, this may be remembered as the moment the United States lost its role as the underwriter of the global economic system. This may be the moment, January 16th, 2016, the day the U.S. lost its role as the underwriter of the global economic system. Robert says Luxembourg's finance minister said it was further proof of the rebalancing of the world economy. And so what will President Obama's new budget on Tuesday, what will it unveil? How much more spending will it add? How much will it require Congress to raise the debt level ceiling again and again and again? How much more can we print? How many more dollars can we print off? How much more money can we borrow? How many more programs, spending programs, can we inaugurate? How much more interest can we pay on our debt? How many more promises can we make to Americans, to immigrants, to those on Social Security? The party is going to come to a screeching halt, and soon. Robert says, China is openly challenging America and many of America's closest allies, Britain, Germany, Italy, Australia, New Zealand, France, Taiwan, are giving their approval. See, these are the ones we tried to say, hey, don't swing over into China's camp. You've got to trust in the dollar. You've got to rely on the dollar. You've got to look to the United States as the role that it's been for many years, the underwriter of the entire global economic system. Nations around the world, they see that it's coming to an end. And so what we're witnessing is a new global order China challenging the United States and all these other nations, including allies, giving their nod of approval. Robert says, even nations like the Philippines, who depend on America for political support, fear China more. The infrastructure is being built for a world without the United States. That's what's happening. I mean, okay, that's Robert's words. But the Luxembourg finance minister says that the world economy is being rebalanced. Larry Summers says we're looking at this being the moment the U.S. loses its role as underwriter of the global economic system. It's all about a world without the United States. Robert says it's a sign that although the U.S. dollar may appear strong right now, its long-term fundamentals are swiftly eroding, and with it, American power and prosperity. That's what we see. American power and prosperity, it's all eroding away. It's all been squandered. It's all been put up on the credit card over the last several generations, or at least the last couple generations. Let me just play for you one final clip. This is another sermon by Herbert Armstrong. And keep in mind some of the quotes that I gave to you earlier, where it talked about, you know, he wondered why it was being held back, the formation of these 10 kings, these 10 nations in Europe. And he said there in that previous quote I gave to you that I see now that it's going to be economic crisis and turmoil that's really going to serve as the trigger for Europe to come together, as is prophesied, as your Bible prophesies. This is from a sermon that he gave, Herbert Armstrong gave on November 27th, 1982.
I've known for years, and now you've heard me proclaim again and again and again, that the United States of Europe is coming. They're going to unite 10 nations in Europe. And the Vatican will be on top of the heap. Why has it not happened? 49 years have gone by. At last I can tell you that it is. All the pieces are falling into place now, all of a sudden. Well, in Europe, there are many nations, they speak different languages. They're divided by various languages. They're divided by different national aspirations and national patriotisms and by different currencies. They have the German mark, the French franc, the English pound, and the lira in Italy. And the peso or whatever it is in Spain, they have different kind of currency, different kind of money. Now they have gotten together in an economic system. That's been going on now for a good many years. The EEC or the European Economic Community. But that is only something that knocks down tariff barriers for international trade among the nations of Europe. But what they want is political union. What they want is one military force. What they want is one great world power. The two great powers in the world are the Soviet Union and the United States. The Union of Soviet Socialist Republics and the United States. And we are really fearing Russia. Let me say right here, I know of no prophecy in the Bible that speaks specifically of any war between Russia and the United States. And I've been saying for years and years that is not the way that the World War III will come. However, let me say that the resurrection of this so-called Holy Roman Empire that existed from 554 on to 1814 in Europe will trigger World War III. The nuclear World War III that is going to destroy our major cities.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
I didn't get all the final stats on the weekend program that we had, which advertised the incredible human potential. Richard Palmer usually contributes to that final report that I get Monday morning. And as it happens, his wife was giving birth this morning, early this morning, about 4:30 a.m., and she gave birth to their second daughter, little Catherine. So we've got two little babies around Edstone that we're going to be seeing quite a lot of in the weeks and months and years ahead. Brad McDonald and his wife, Erin, they had a baby girl about a month ago, Sage. So we have little Sage and little Catherine now, the newest additions to the Edstone family. So I'll give Mr. Palmer a little latitude on finishing up those final stats, and we'll bring those to you a little bit later in the week. Richard, however, did give me a report last week that summarized some of the stats from last year, 2015, and some of this I've gone through before, but it was just pretty inspiring to see it all in one report, and so I do want to thank him and appreciate and just tell him how much I appreciate all this this information. It's good to have a snapshot. Last year we had around 5,500 total responses to the TV program here in the UK, and it amounted to 3,900 individuals, specific individuals or addresses that responded to the program. It says here that roughly 1,000 people who responded to the Key of David contacted us more than once during the year. So we have this program on some fairly small stations here in the UK, but I think what you can see from these stats and from just the number of people that are repeat callers, we are building up a nice little audience for the Key of David UK program. The most popular program we had last year was the one that advertised the Holy Roman Empire book, the new book that, as it happens, Richard worked on with Brad McDonald. And then also, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? That was the program that I think got upwards of 230 responses. He says, and this is probably obvious to those of you that have been listening regularly, he says that Mystery of the Ages was by far our most successful book as far as people calling in and requesting literature goes. And that, as I think you know, is because we were advertising it frequently, particularly as the year came down to the wire, as we were pushing for that 2,000 goal. Along the way, we added about 600 new subscribers to the Philadelphia Trumpet. Quite a few more, of course, got 3 months, I believe, of sample issues. But 600 went on to subscribe to it yearly. So that's quite an increase, and he has some really good ideas here in his summary, Richard does, on what we might be able to do to increase that over the next year. And he also suggested that we run some of those greatest hits, as he calls them, programs from last year that did generate quite a large response. Some of those Mystery of the Ages programs, and one, I think, in which we offered the incredible human potential. But coming back to this figure that he drew attention to in the first page of the summary, 1,000 people who responded to the Key of David contacted us more than once, some of them two, three, and four times. And he says here, in general, when we offered a new book or one that hadn't been offered in a long time, we got quite a few calls from regulars, again, indicating that there were people or are people who are listening in week by week, and that if, you know, it's offering something they already have, they don't call in. But then if there's a new booklet that we haven't yet offered, then they call in and get that and add it to their collection. So some good feedback from some of the people who have been following us here in the UK. Switching over to a report that my producer here, Sam Livingston, gave to me yesterday. He was talking about how just plugging the radio program more on the TV station here, we've been doing that more with some of the promos in between and at the end of the programs, but that he feels like, it, even though it's a very small number still, that we are getting more listeners to this program, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, as a result of just advertising it more or drawing more attention to it on the program over here. Typically with the weekly stats on where people are listening from or where they're downloading the podcast from, the UK has either been in the fifth or the sixth position. And I think last week we were pretty consistently at the fourth slot ahead of other areas like the Philippines, which we have quite a few followers and listeners and readers and subscribers down in the Philippines. So hopefully the Philippines now can boost the numbers as they hear this and accept the challenge to catch up again with the UK region. In any event, some good feedback as far as statistics are concerned. As far as listeners each day, if you total it all up, of course, you can go to thetrumpet.com and just look at the SoundCloud file. If that's how you listen to the program, you can see the number of people that have downloaded that file or have listened or played that file. And typically, it can be anywhere between 500 and maybe 1,000 if there's one that's a little more popular. Well, you add to that the number of people that also are downloading the podcast through iTunes or through some other service where it comes to their phone and then sits there and they can listen to it at their leisure. It's hard to say how many of those 200 listen to every single one. It's sort of like the TuneIn app, which I think has 560 or 70 followers now. It's hard to say how many of our followers on TuneIn of those 560 or 70 are actually listening via TuneIn. And then the other thing that's hard to really get an exact number of is, of course, how many people are listening to the live over-the-air broadcast there in the North Edmond area. But I think a very conservative estimate with this particular program is that each day there's well over 1,000 when you add all of these ways that we make it available to you, the listener. So we certainly have grown from, well, little or nothing at the very start back in May, haven't even been on board for a year yet, but we really have seen KPCG, like with everything else in the work, growing and developing over these past several months. Make sure that you, with all this in mind, make sure that you send us some feedback so that we can tell the rest of you where the listeners are listening in from, how they download the program, and we'll try to get to some of that that email feedback later on in the week. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream, as you now know, is available at kpcg.fm and also at thetrumpet.com. You can get them in both places. Email us again, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today in this new week, and we'll see you tomorrow.